Yeah. I thought we'd actually start this time by my asking you about what you remember the Labour Party in the 20s, you know, generally, and what part you play.
Well, we didn't play an active part all the time, except between in election time. Mm. In between, we were what some of you describe as a member or not. I really got a bit conscientious about it in the 1929 election when Labour got in. I don't know if you knew Porus Oliver. He was a secretary.
Dorothy Reed's brother.
Yeah, Dorothy Reed's brother, I think.
Yes, a lot older than him.
Yeah. He died quite recently, and it's lately, you know, when he was alive. He was on the gate for the Lewis Football Club, and I chatted to him then. Well, in this 1929 election, I was helping then, and it was when the Lewis Press was built, the Lewis Press where it is now, but just a bare patch of green with a wretched old cottage in the middle of it, wasn't it? It was a frightful cottage, and that was the Labour Party headquarters. And I saw first coming along, the first time they were coming along fire more, and I said I wanted to help. You see, he says, right, and come along, and we went along carrying this stuff. And we talked about the election, and I pointed out that we should win it because, yeah, we should win it. Because all the women got vote now, there's complete universal suffrage above the age of 21 then. And he said, you know, I remember his words, and he said, yes, you can. He said, we've got political freedom now. Now we've got to fight for economic freedom. that is what I remember of that. It was a frightful place, but we didn't win that here. But we won it in the country, and then the second Labour government in for 2 years. That's when I first became more involved in it, in a really second while. And then, as far as I was concerned, that my job came to an end, it was ironworks. And I was an insurance collector, dotting it all over the place. And I met the New Haven Labour people. One's name was Tanner, who was a treasurer, and one was Percy Wood. All the New Haven people will probably remember them. But I didn't know anything much about the Labour Party. And a year or two had passed. I worked in the WEA and that sort of thing. But a year or two had passed, and Frank Hancock came here. He came in 1931. It was a bad election for us, but he came and offered to stand. And from that time on, we might as well say, we began to work with the Labour Party, put more into it than we do.
The 1931 that the WEA tried to start here.
Oh yes, yeah, tried to start. That's right. It didn't collapse. The what didn't always the Labour Party by that time.
Dinah Stock came in.
Well, tell me about that.
Well, Dinah Stock was the organiser for the South Eastern District of the WEA. Now, before I left the foundry, I had a long line at Mould, where I worked piecework, working very fast, and we lay on the floor, and we had a long line of it. As I went past Charlie Watford, who had been one of the leaders of the Moulders' strike in 1920, we didn't have a bit of leg for him. To me, he was a bloke who didn't help much, sort of thing. Because when you were young, you forget what the jokes were already done when he was busy, as you see. And when we had this funny one, we had this bit of a laugh at each other, so I legged for him, quite a good lady legged for him. He said, he went to his car, he said, look, don't worry me, go and learn something about things. He gave me his card to say there was a WA meeting at some girlfriends. Um, on the Saturday afternoon, you see. And I, at point they started the WEA here, they had a restart one here, I could learn something. And so I went up there. There were about 15 or 16 people in there. And I went in and sat down, and I was in thought, and listened to this man talking about America mostly, a man named DeVere. And all these people, I could see that these people, this is sort of people I want to get them up. I look around and I thought, oh, this is, these are the people, where, why have I not seen them before? I didn't know until 1945, that was 16 years afterwards, that they were all deadheads. She brought them with her from various branches. The Queen of various branches to make up an audience, and she told me that this 15-year-old, which is here, that she looked round in there while DeVere was speaking, but well, it's no good, there's nobody here. I mean, those that she especially imported. And much to our surprise, when it came to an end, I walked up there and said, well, when do we start on here? So she thought she'd better start on it as it was. It was very nice, though. Another nice thing in life, I think. There were, I tried to get some fellas together, but you couldn't, they didn't come, you know. She wasn't highbrow, I mean, she, you know, she didn't speak in a highbrow manner, but she just didn't get them to come, you see. We shifted down here, and so we went two of us in the class. Because that was the best you could do, when you got two in the class anyway, you see.
And what classes, what did you give herself?
She's, I said, I left it to her, I said, she said, well, you knew nothing about studying anything, you see. Something nice and easy, and with industrial history, which she's chosen the industrial history. And we did that, didn't we?
Yes.
Then we went on child psychology, since Bunting was being born, that's why it had come down here early from Gaelic. So we did child psychology. And then the next session we started to really learning things. We had play readings. We did Major Barbara, Bernard Shaw, Major Barbara. The Silver Tassie, Sean O'Casey, and things of that description. Then we did editing, and for that, Reginald Reynolds joined us in, and Julian Bell, the poet who was killed in Spain, went to Bell's elder brother. They joined for then. Reginald had to take us in hazing, you see. He said, I know the tape in hazing, and he went. And met various people here, didn't he? Building foreman. And,
people from the council?
Yeah, Sam Baker, the chairman of the Hazen Committee, was here. And he stood there and spoke, so we had a nice little class there, didn't he? It was rather nice.
What do you remember about Sam Baker? Because he was instrumental in getting some council houses for those girls.
Yes, he was, he did. That's why he spoke about here, you see. How he went to work. People said that it would spoil the beautiful cross the river. Other people said they'd be flooded, you see. And he went sideways to Mia. He was back to the forest, or the mates didn't tell anyone. They saw, he was a man's name, though. Sanderson, Sir Fane Sanderson, and stood back over there. And they looked like, you know, they saw they could see him. Sanderson agreed with them. It wasn't, Sanderson hadn't complained of anything, you see. Sanderson agreed it was quite a good place to have, you see. Lewis was, he told us, Lewis was blacklisted, the worst, one of the worst 11 places in England for not taking notice of the Hazen Act.
It was the Wheatley's Housing Act.
Wheatley's Housing Act.
The houses were to be built. Had no greater density than 12 to the acre. And we've got 80 to the acre in some parts.
Yeah. Well, our slums, Romney here are dotted, a few acres here and a few there, sort of. Anyway, then you went back to the council and said, well, gentlemen, are you going to do it or not? And so they finally agreed to have it done.
Some people still think that the landfall houses are flooded, and they never are. They never have been. During the worst weather, when I was collecting insurance, I walked all around that estate and never saw a reasonable flood.
And the guy that was very keen on housing policy, from what I remember, again, through the minutes of the Borough Council of Surgery.
Who?
Every. John Every, yes.
Oh, John Every, yeah.
Because he was chairman of
housing. Yeah, that's right, he was.
What was he like?
Well, he was a good laissez-faire man, a kind of old-fashioned type of industrialist, liberal, the strength of the Liberal Party of that year. Liberal, old-fashioned, laissez-faire. The Tories were laissez-faire only quite comparatively recently. It was the Liberals who were the laissez-faire people. The Tories were more for state control. Their country is something that's alive. If nature's always alive, and they are profitable.
On John Every, I remember he called a meeting not long before we were married, and said that to help anybody who wanted to build their own house, he would supply all the ironwork at a greatly reduced price, which was a good offer if anybody had got the initial money to lay out on the plot of land. And of course in those days you could buy a jolly good plot for £50.
This on the housing, the meeting that John Every called, I went to that in his office, and he let go of the council then. They made the Neville estate, and all that lay next to him, the Dames estate. They sold that, and he gave away the finest site ever. He says, they sold it. He's very much ashamed of them.
They let Brimmer build it.
And all that, that's where you were born, was it? Up there somewhere?
No, I was born in Brighton, in fact, in maternity.
He said that the naval prison had been offered to the town for £2,000. He said, there's more than £2,000 worth of York paving stone in it. We could pave the whole of the high street from top to bottom with York paving stone in the prison. He said they wouldn't have it. If they had, you see, they'd have got rid of it, 30-40 years before they actually did.
He said, going to be sold to a local authority.
And he said it could have the finest flats in Europe, equal to those famous ones on the continent. And it would be a wonderful place for a huge block of flats, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It would have been. It would have been there, I suppose.
Now, he was a supporter of Lloyd George, wasn't he?
There was a meeting with Lloyd George. It was in the Dripping Pan, wasn't it?
Yes. There was one new thing about that. It was a huge affair, you know. The Dripping Pan was full right across the field up the banks. It was in the early days of amplifying, you see, running bone and so on. And he was speaking, and he said, sorry? And of course.
He whispered it, and it came right.
Everybody laughed. He said, well, these new inventions. Is this Sussex or Surrey? And of course, what would have gone by with no microphones? It was a carriage weapon. People call them a Dripping Pan, I should imagine. The hazing that was done then was very well done. The flats, in some safe place flats in St John's Street, you see, they're still there. All this Wheatley Act was carried in 1936, the work on the noise, because they were behind. Some went to Winterbourne, and some went to Langbourne, and some went to Safe Place Flats. I think of Safe Place Flats because they were Butler had those built, you know, the Borough Surveyor, and some people called them Butler's Folly, they were ugly. But Butler's Folly Flats, they never let water in. And it's another 40 years now.
It is almost 40, isn't it?
And that architect built one over St. Pancras, you know, of course, they never walked in. They didn't let water in, but they're damp lives. I know these things can't be helped, they could have had me Butler like that. But Mr. Butler was very strict. do you remember, Doug, the Langbourne?
Oh, yes. The people making the roads, what was the name? Quite a famous.
Wimbis, I think, wasn't it? Was it Wimbis or somebody of that?
Quite a famous.
Yeah, big firm.
Contracting firm. They brought their stuff for the roads already mixed. Butler went down, picked up a handful and looked at it and said, I want this brought in separate quantities so that I know what you're putting in. Mm-hmm. And they argued, but he made them cart it all the way and bring back the different piles of sand and cement and whatever it is they put in the roads. And we never had any trouble with the roads for years. Some of them, they're covering now. But they were just open concrete roads. Old Butler did a jolly good job there, didn't he? And he designed the Langport houses. And the first lot of houses at Langport are laid out in diamond patterns. It's only the more recent ones that go in straight lines.
Most of the earlier ones are much more attractive.
Yes, and if you look down on them from up on the hill, you know, they looked really quite pretty.
They were like a long diamond, weren't they?
Yeah.
Like that. Along with a long body to it. Mm. But that's how the housing was really set up in the West. They did very well after the First War, immediately after the First War. But then it tailed off to nothing, you see. And they sold the ground as the...
Actually, that wasn't such a bad thing, though. Letting the building works have it, because the amount that it was sold privately to individual house owners, and the amount you had to put down was comparatively small, and if you had a decent job, Ringman Building Works, i.e. John Christie, would take a slightly increased monthly repayment. He had an arrangement with the Building Society, and from a slightly increased monthly repayment, he would waive the
deposit. That's what some people advise doing now in council work, you see.
Yeah.
Councils do it, of course. But Christie did that all those years ago.
Came back to the 1931 election. Did you have any ILP people?
Oh, yeah. I forget the man's name. I think a man had a car insurance. What was his name?
Thornton, you mean?
Yeah, I believe it was Thornton.
Yes.
Yes, he was, I think he must have been an agent in that one. A man you mentioned just now, at Ringler, Trissing. He was also in 1931.
He's a Quaker.
Yes, and the ILP, curiously enough, Reg Reynolds was ILP, but had nothing to do with this election. He fallen out with the Labour government. He'd been to India and joined in with Gandhi, you see. And because of their treatment of Gandhi, the Labour Party, but they've got time to do everything, you know, if they went for that, no, wouldn't help them at all.
You don't fill the draft there, Charles.
No, I'm all right there.
If you do, change over to that one.
No, it's all right. I'm quite all right here. No draft this time. Mm-hmm. Where was the 1931 election named from? I'm just trying to think. 1931, I think it was East State Street, wasn't it, Zara? That Ivy Taverner, wasn't it, Miss Taverner? Who used to come down from head office. I seem to remember her. You know, Eastgate Street, a bit where the road is near, near to the, what was the old Baptist Chapel Sunday School? There's a house there they were working at one time when I came by. Though I must stop, by that time it belonged to St John's Terrace. There was one committee room there, I remember. But things weren't done so neatly as they're done now. I think the posh way of doing it now, you know, the checking numbers or that sort of thing, was first brought into prominence by the Commonwealth people after the war. I heard some Richard Ackland speak and he spoke about it. And I went up to London for the Labour Party, became secretary just then, went up to London, and they advised doing the same thing, you see. And we did it much more clumsy way. You took the numbers of and transferred the numbers of broken down onto another sheet, you see. It was quite a complicated business even then. But you did know the numbers that hadn't voted. But it worked and worked and worked. And Catherine Jacobs, she had to work like anything with a friend of hers from the Fabian Society. They did the 1945 election, and really they worked and worked, and they kept on snapping at each other because they went too quick or too slow or something. But where you with your, call it the knocker sheet, don't you?
The ready.
The ready pad, that's right. You just care what was done with, isn't it?
Well, because we only introduced that here in 1970.
That's right, yeah.
Because up to then we used to have, you remember we used to have the sheets, sheets the electoral register all pasted up on a huge sheet of, a huge sheet of brown wrapping paper.
That's right, yeah.
And then you used to sort of cross through all the ones that hadn't voted.
Mm. I remember the first time I saw you, you were working away on that women's sheet, and you apparently kept working until the polling booths closed down. And nobody asked me if you wanted a drink or if you'd had anything to eat. I went and got some fish and chips, didn't I?
Mm.
I thought, poor little guy, so how old was he, about 9 or 10?
Yeah, I was about 9 or 10.
But you knew how to do the job. Gosh, I reckon you deserve it to stand. Is that thing going?
Yes, it's all right, don't matter. Won't do him any harm to hear this. Sorry, you think I deserve to stand? Why?
You deserve to stand if only for the work you put in those elections.
Oh, it was great fun.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that I used to really sort of dislike most of all was round about, we would be doing quite well, even into the 67, 68, 69, we always lost. Up until about 8 o'clock, and then the 8 o'clock train from London would come in, and you get the numbers, 2 or 3 sheets of these things from the town hall, and there'd be this great rash of blue ticks going everywhere, and there'd be sort of 20 out of 25 will be Conservatives, because they just come straight on the train and walk straight up Fisher Street and go straight into the vote.
Yes.
It was amazing. It used to knock us back a good 100 votes at that time of day, and you could never pull them back.
No, it's too late then.
Yeah. But anyway, yes, I was going to ask you about these elections, because the thing that you get in the newspapers a lot of the time was that people always thought they were going to win.
Oh yes, in the early days it was terrible not to win. Yeah. Terrible disappointment.
What do you think that was?
I know why it was.
Well, we all worked so hard, you see, that we thought we were bound to win.
I think the most thing for people like us were very sincere about it, you see, and it seemed so plain in those days that I've socially made all this difference and nobody did it. You see? And you used to wonder, well, is everybody silly and are they all villains or whatever, you see? To suddenly realise, well, the real trouble was you only worked in those little rooms. And so during a period of time, you never met anybody else. And when you got really interested in it and went to the Labour Party with that group or whatever it was, then of course you didn't see anybody else, only Labour people. Consequently, you always thought you were going to win.
You know, if you met anybody fresh, you simply couldn't understand why they voted anything.
Well, you see, you thought, oh, I don't know, it was strange. This Basil Hall one, we thought, well, must win this. It seemed to.
This was a by election,
yes, 1924. Yeah. This was the crux of my in our life because it set us studying harder, didn't it? We didn't work any harder directly for the Labour, but we did learn quite a lot during this time, and from then onwards. Well, there is a big 2,500 left by, and it didn't seem possible, you know. But then, of course, we've been for about 3 or 4 weeks only among the same lot of people, anyway, you know. And America was in the 1918 election, you thought we used to put an old veteran, because only a few years before, really. Mm. It's much like you talking about 1967, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, right. But, yes. Well, do you remember about some of these candidates? I mean, because you talked about Joe Carter, but there was Milner Black, and then there was Basil Hall, and then Frank.
It
Hansel.
Wasn't Joe Carter, it was Harry, wasn't it?
No, it was Joe. It was Joe Carter Sr.
Oh, Tom. Was it?
Oh, sorry, Tom Carter.
Milner Black, I knew him, but I didn't know him. I had no idea he was a dentist, probably, you know.
Or a chemist.
He came from Brighton or somewhere that way. I didn't know him well. I was just one of the herbs who, you know, made him into meeting that sort of thing. Basil Hall, we got to know, he appeared. Dorothy's brother was on the East Sussex, Frank was on the East Sussex. I remember he came in and said, while I was here, we got the Labour candidates. We thought we were going to have a Labour candidate, you see. That was the tariff reform one in 1923. And Basil Hall fought that, and he got 5,000 votes. And then within 6 months, he fought again in the by-election, you see. And he locked up at 2,000, but they only got about 9,000 or something in that description, as far as I remember. And then, of course, the Zinoviev letter at the end of the year, that's what was all together. He only got 5,000 again then. Almost lost his deposit because the Liberal was a Liberal then. The Liberals, frankly, a known thing, they'd never win a game. But nevertheless, they had quite a big lot of votes and they were split. They had two separate parties. But they did get quite a big lot of votes here, you know. In the Basil Hall one, I think, or the one, or the other, that 2,008 of, say, a man women on 9,000, that's what a lot, isn't it, you see? Those people might have voted Labour, and put on Essex then, and we might have won. They could have a lot of votes like they've got now. Though everybody knew they would not win another election, another government, you know.
Now, who was Frank Hancock?
Frank Hancock appeared in 1931 and fought that election for us. He was a Quaker and
lived at Rodmore.
Yeah, he lived in Rodmore. He was a man who was money, and he went about. He had caravans, drawn by horses, and 2 caravans. And I remember reading about him where the original old Daily Herald, the really old Daily Herald every day. And I remember reading about this man fighting at Shrewsbury or somewhere, Westwood. And then suddenly he appeared in Lewis. He lost the by election there, then he suddenly appeared in Lewis. Offered the stand, so of course they joyfully had him. Look at him, Lewis read the election. He only got 5,000 votes, and they got a hell of a lot of votes. The Tories, they made 32 favourable votes. A lot, you know, really.
But actually, we've never lost the deposit, have we?
No, never lost the deposit, no.
Well, the first time we ever came third was in 1974.
Yes, I know, yeah.
They'd always come second, yes, in 1972. Disgrace.
He was rather nice, Dan, a pacifist. I remember his Eve of Pol meeting, and all people were following him red, but they were the same people, it's quite obvious. And I remember him on the platform, you know, fighting back, as it were. And I was rather glad he didn't go alone together. It would have remained for this ace at the top of Rodwell Hill. It stopped him. We got to know him fairly well, didn't we, Dara?
Yes.
And through him, other people, the Quaker brought in. And they did sort of run the Labour Party for some time.
They used to have their meetings at the Friends meeting.
And even to the first meeting after the war, this war, was this last war, was at the Friends meeting, as you see, so then 10 years, what it was, since the last general election before that. 1936, why I was going to mention Norman Gordon, sometime before this election, I don't know when exactly, but the League of Nations Union met, and I attended. The meeting was crazy, and on the platform was the member who was Beamish still, I think. Let happen for English. I don't think Gavin was there as yet. And there was Alderman Every, a little candidate in front of him, instant last time, and Alderman Gordon. And Alderman Gordon, he was one of the finest elocutionists you ever heard of. I was a good elocutionist. And he seized the opportunity to make a terrific speech, pacifist speech. Remember there, put his arms above his head and saying it's no good just doing this. All I'm just saying now, all war is accursed and wrong. And before he spoke, he took something, when I threw something in his mouth, and he looked at these people on there. That's what made me say, Alderman Gordon, I suppose Alderman Gordon was living in a real world, see, he's not such an idealist as Frank Hancock. He knew anything that actually were, you see. So he must have, But at that election itself, he said, I went to one of the election meetings, I think it was 1937, but it was 1936. He said he had the Tory manifesto there, and he said, picked it to pieces, and this line here, he said, be careful, I detect conscription in that. So he's very much against conscription.
Yes.
That's what I'm rather surprised that they should pick Alderman Gordon.
For the by-election.
Yeah. But no doubt, he was a realist. That was the position then. He didn't. If he chained himself for that, was actually what everybody had to do before the war ended. It was rather a different sort of war from the previous nationalistic sort of thing, you see.
Yes, of course, Alderman Gordon stood in 29 as well.
Yeah.
So he stood twice as well for us. What was Admiral Beamish like? So you must have heard him.
Well, I've heard Admiral Beamish, yes, and we heard him when he first came. In those days, it was the old Tory fashion. The platform was full of flowers, and all the Tory ladies, they had a big picture on the platform. Admiral Beamish spoke in this fashion. I'm not decrying because of this, it's just They all were like that in those days. Anyway, before I start, we'll have some with the elixir of Sussex, pure water.
Yes.
Picked two bouquets. I'll give these to the first two ladies in the land, my mother and my wife. This is true. I heard him at the end of the war. Towards the end of the war is when the Greek Civil War was on. Before the end of this war.
Yes.
And that was from there. The man, you might know his name, I forget, his name was Norman something or other. He was a writer of spy books and that sort of thing. And evidently he was sent round as by the government on pep talks and that sort of thing. And he was speaking about the Balkans and the Greek business.
Bernard, you mean? And you?
Bernard, yes, that's Bernard.
Bernard something.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, he gave this lecture to, it was one Saturday afternoon, but we all went there, everybody, the interested bloke to listen to, and he'd done a lot of work in these places, and he told us about the people. And presently, Beamish had to speak in Peggy, Admiral Beamish, had to speak, much older man there. And he said, I was recording a titter, but it shows you the outlook, the old outlook, you see. He said that, of course, after all, I forget his words here, so it's the gist of them. That it's all very well for you to phrase these people up. That these Yugoslavs and Greeks. But you must remember, there's funny people about it. Yeah, this is his actual word now. On the ship where we went once, when he was off from the ship, we put him in one of these places. He said that we had a man who was fond of physical fitness, officer. He said every time he got a chance, he put his running kit at a cross country run. He said we got off in Greece, about the first kilometer cross country run, and somebody didn't reckon that took a shot at him. Some shepherd or something took a shot at him. English officer. He was a wee muddy clothes, but he should recognise me, the officer class, even though he had running clothes on, it was very funny.
Was it a favourite society?
The Fabian Society immediately after this war, thrown from India, but it was a very good one in Brighton. After 1945 onwards.
But nothing before the war?
No, I don't think it was any good particular before the war. The property was a branch in Brighton.
Nice toy, isn't it?
It's quite fun, yes.
We'll get one of these, though.
Yeah. What do you remember of the general strike?
Well, we often had strikes then. The family men, but that's why they weren't in the strike. The strike I told you of in 1920 finished then, and finished the governor as a man in the Employers Federation as well, the union. But when there were strikes, there were quite frequently strikes, you knew, when you worked piece work, remember, you knew that you couldn't earn so much because you wouldn't have the material to work with. They had to get coke and all sorts of things to a family. Our cars, we cast sometimes 26 tons a day, you know. So guess what a model can, well, my lot of cutting edge meant, either minor strikes or any strike. So what I remember most of it, that is having a lot less money to bring home. We don't just marry, as a matter of fact, don't we? The talk, I was very sympathetic to the strikers. Most chaps were, but they all kept quiet. When the 9 months started, 1920, everybody was quiet. But hearing things, words said, there was a lot of hot air talked about it, you know. I heard a man, we mentioned this the other day, I heard a man come in, a man who worked there, an elderly, steady man, came in and came inside him. After dinner, yesterday after dinner, he said, oh, they're rushing to popular hospital, you know, they're rushing to popular hospital. He said, the strike led me, obviously, didn't it? But rushing popular hospital, why do popular people rush their own hospital? I don't know. But that sort of thing began to be said, which shows you why it's so hard to explain how things were then. The strike, the Argentinian died, it was quite silent everywhere. It was a beautiful evening, there wasn't much traffic anyway in those days. But remember, that kind of quietness of it everywhere, everybody was thinking deeply of anything, I suppose. Yeah. Much like, say, the day or two before the declaration of this last war, that sort of thing, you know. Really.
Yeah, of course the railway came out, didn't it?
Well, all these railway men came out, yes. And some printers, I think, but I wouldn't be certain. I know the railway men, in towns such as this, the railway men were the men the working class depended on. They were the only those who were destroyed. They were those who were properly organised, you see.
Yeah. Were there any meetings? Mm-hmm. Labour Party meetings at that period?
I didn't know many of there were. We were just
had sort of street meetings, didn't they?
Oh, they said street meetings. Oh, yes, quite frequently street meetings.
What were they like?
No, Castle Bank was a place to have one, but we only attended them really in election times. Mm. On Castle Bank, on one occasion in the 1924, we saw Ben Tillett speaking there, but he left the scripture, you see, in 1924, so Ben Smith. All sorts of people that you read about now, I've forgotten most of their names, they were terrific veterans, been in the movement for more than 25 years, sort of thing. And they were the men you read about in those days, that was like 1880 something.
What was it that got you most interested in socialism and how did that happen?
I suppose it was the sort of things we read.
I think the having the Daily Herald partly, and of course the Fabian Society, the Fabian publications. If you read when Basil Hall said thank you to Shaw was governed then, and Basil Hall said, but if you want to read anything, the finest literature ever, read his essay on rent. It's a first one of Fabian essays. So we got a shilling copy and read it, you see. We bought it in a Miss Chills, which is a shop where Moore's is now up the town, with a 19th century shop front. Moore's, they both shop there, with a square little old fashioned shop front. That's one that mustn't be opened, that window. Well, Miss Chew had a bookshop there, she got it for us, didn't you know? Mm. It was a shilling.
That's when we started, but I always thought it was two bookshops, but you know.
Yeah, but a shilling.
That's when we started buying books.
That's why we started buying books and going. You know, and only looking for, in fact, a lot of people read for various reasons. At one time I didn't, if a book didn't have politics, I wasn't interested in it whatsoever.
Mm. Now, that book had the essays of quite a number of people. I had the best names.
Oh yeah, the best names. Had Wallace, Graham Wallace, Sidney Webb. We got their name though. Not the book itself, but we were part of Ben one day, the Bundy, it's Bundy book, but it was a paperback thing, and it was even locked there for years, didn't it? Till Bundy brought, we had one, and then whatever, that a wonderful this one.
Yeah. And what else did you read then? Sort of gradually developed as you read more and more things?
For a while, as far as I was concerned, for a while I read guided stuff, you know. Great deal of Cole, learning, you know. Cole was a teacher before anything, you see. Down the stock from the under Cole, I suppose you thought, well, it's just something easy for to read, you know. Because it's all research stuff, isn't it? It's got footnotes and footnotes and footnotes and bibliography for it to look into and so forth.
We read all sorts of short stuff.
Oh, short stuff, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure, Wells and Huxley, Aldous Huxley. I used to go in for them. Four titles, Wells, four essays, Shaw, to get some life in it, and
you told me before of all the different people that visited this house and stayed there the night, so you must tell us about those.
There's Dinah Stock, Reginald Reynolds. Dinah Stock used to come Saturday night sometimes, apart from classes, and always she brought in somebody. There was a man named Mass, a Dr. Mass, who was a refugee from Von Papen government. That's one before forgiveness. So,
remember, he directed his letters for the time.
Yeah, yeah. He told us he got in a frightful whale once from ringing a bell, you know, on some red official's diplomat's door. He got in a frightful whale. They said, well, of course, the war, but I don't know, I'll forget that.
Was he a social democrat?
Something like that description, I suppose. But if he was a refugee from one part of his government, because this way, it was before he came into power when he was here, you see. So I don't know. Well, his name was Dr. Mass, M-A-S. The Julian Bell, one who was killed in Spain, good useful bloke to handle it kindly, you know, into tenure. They your words, you know, he just...
What was he like, actually?
Big, much like Quentin Bell. Big, and rather nice. One funny thing about it, one night he came here, all this great beard was all gone. And he came to the door after. You know, we've not different to other men. I just remember that now. He had a beard, much like the Bolshevist on the poster I told you about. You know, much like some people have now, I suppose. Then it was such a shock, and then and suddenly appeared in the dark with it all gone.
Did you run into Leonard in Virginia, really? Did you run into Leonard in Virginia?
Never met Leonard Wolfe, yeah. But mostly since the war. Mostly since the war. Quite a few accounting more people, they quite a number of people come in. Since the war, MPs have stopped here. Menish first, wouldn't it be? Menish came and stopped here.
Palmer stopped. With his secretary.
With his secretary.
What was the man's name?
I forget the fellow's name. Palmer, an MP came here to speak to us, and trains weren't too good. It was 1948, they should have been.
He'd got such an out of the way idea of Lewis.
Yeah.
That he thought you had to go to Brighton and then change and come on to us from London. We didn't realise that you could get a train straight from us, that we were fighting in Borden Junction. He went back to Brighton, dropped asleep in the train, and was shunted back to Lewes again. He went to the White House and couldn't get an answer to his knocking. They wouldn't at that time answer anybody who came after 10 o'clock. Yeah. And the only address he's got was down here, so he got a policeman to do it with him. Came down to us. Well, he said, could he just sit in a chair for the night? I said, well, you're a bit better than that, but I'll have to tidy a room and put clean sheets in the bed. So he went up to phone his wife while I got the attic ready. I think we've got both the girls at home at the time. Anyway, he apparently slept all right. He seemed quite happy, had a good breakfast next morning.
Yes. You've had others here too, haven't you? Mm. You mentioned to me before people like Horace King.
Oh yes, we had the three of them. Redhead and Marsh. We gave them the front bedroom and Horace King had the back bedroom where he would be nice and quiet. And we went up in the attic ourselves that night.
What was that made of? Three?
They were electioneering, or you know, getting ready for an election.
They were men can't be doing it, you see. There was some, one doing it always, and some joining when they could, you know. And it was rather nice, and they had the foreign exchange. We were quite a lot of people.
Where was that? When was that?
I was chairman of the constituency. It must have been about 1958 or somewhere, description, or 9, but...
They didn't get anything posh here, but we could always find some tea and cheese.
As I said, when speaking of the WEA once, a lot of people used to come here. Most of them were graduates, you know, everybody was shockingly poor. And they used to come here, and Dorothy used to be worried about them. And I said, you know, use a bit of gold.
Maybe they didn't have a proper meal where they were staying. Yeah. They were so hard enough in those days. Everybody was poor.
They used to live on cheese and oranges because I had the meeting. Dorothy, her age was known to all the vagrant trade. She chipped their wanderings, but would leave their
pain. I didn't chip them.
No, but you chipped them. You forgot to pay them. You say, well, that would be better fit than that. Chipped their wanderings, but would leave their pain.
What do you remember about Tritton?
Hmm?
What do you remember about Charles Tritton?
He was a very nice man. He's a...
Charles?
Tritton.
Oh, Trinidad, yeah, I don't know him very well. I have met him, and quite a little while ago there was a meeting there to start with McGowan, when we met him, it was in Boris Moore's days. Did you go to it?
Not at that time, but sometime later.
Yeah. Anyway, it wasn't long ago, and Trinidad organised that, didn't he, got that meeting.
I don't remember who was there.
Yeah, Trinidad was there.
Except that Boris Ford was trying to arrange something. But Boris Ford has moved back into Lewes again. He had moved right away.
Who knows?
Haven't seen him.
Who were the people that really sort of ran the party here in the 30s, Charles?
I can't think of the chairman was. The secretary. What was the name? Levin, wasn't it?
Top Lowden.
It's along there. I don't know how old it would be now, but I haven't seen him since the war, but I have on occasions when he was doing something, we get blamed to do that. He was secretary, Frank Hancock came and started up again after his election, and then 1933 or 4. There was a man named Stoke Perrott, he became secretary, a travelling journalistic sort of man, very posh.
So he was known as Stoke Perrott.
Peter Smith used the name Stoke Perrott. when he fell out with him, rather than that, he broke the time. He was one of these people who throw themselves into a thing, get you all going, then draw. You've got all the work to do on your hands, as it were. Mm. And he became secretary, SEB secretary, and then it started going. And no, before very long, he got a job in a library, a travelling library, in the West Country somewhere, you see. I don't think he ever went, but he left his job as secretary and Leyden took it on. On the constituency side, there were men I mentioned, yes, no, Tanner, New Aden, and King, what's his name?
Percy Wood.
Percy Wood, that's right, yeah. I thought Percy King didn't say him, but Percy Wood. For a while, about this period, 1934, it was just before I laid out, when I laid out, we kind of dropped, but it was necessary to drop really altogether. Jesse Stevens came in. Did you ever hear of Jesse Stevens? No. She stood for the, since the war, I mean, then. She stood for the National Executive Council. She must be somewhere about, or was a few years back. She got it going, as it were, but wasn't very successful. It collapsed, you know, most of it. It just went on like that. I think Frank Hancock rose to be in hospital, and so they were doing this or that. But for a while, we were quite a nice little party. We had a social and a little place in Forrester's Hall, didn't we? Do you remember that?
Oh, yes, the woman from Ditchley.
Ah, yes, that was in 1924. That was a very important time.
Yeah.
When you said, hey, we should mention this then, to do with that 1924 election, there were the Ditchley people came here, and Mrs. Chettle. And, you know, they were really good people, and they used to do Shakespeare bits, didn't they? On this Cape on Cape of the Esser, where they used to meet. They were a nice lot of people. But in 10 years afterwards, in 1934 and 5, then, as I say, we were quite a party. But nobody was capable of doing anything just at that moment. And Stoke Perrott putting the thing down, putting the job down. And before Leyden had all his job to do, posting made, and that's all. Everybody was able to work anyway. It was pretty hopeless. And Frank Hancock, I remember him saying, well, you'll have to buck up. He said, I know it's bad, it's hard enough for you. It was a night such as this, you see. And when the Foresters Hall band. And he said, I'm doing this to help you, as much as anyone, he said. Come to me all. He said, if I didn't care for doing this, if I didn't like you people, and care for doing this for the working people, you know, I could be on the channel, they go, and this miserable week, could go to Sicily or somewhere like that. So, you know, he had a good many hours to try and get it going, but I don't know what happened after that. It was the last thing of the Labour Party I remember.
Yes, when were you laid up?
1935.
How long?
He's been
warned. I've ever seen Ted. We won't let it get him dead. No, the spy read it on Ridden, Ridden, War of Israel was high, and this and that was there.
And to Charlie, I say you've been laid up ever since, and you won't let him get you there.
No.
Yeah.
It wouldn't get any better, you see. And it's rather rather a pleasure to me, but the thing I got so far with it, with the advice of a doctor in Buxton, where they went to Mary's, stopped it, it was finished then, or they stopped me going any further, and sent me to Buxton, and the doctor at Buxton, he said, this is as perfect, drink the water to save it, but do this, you see. So I did this, he said, that's what you want to do, and I did this, only thing I want. And carried it faithfully. So where it was, the idea was, I think Dorothy is right, he said, they told you I should live 10 years, in stiff all the time. Now, this is what struck me, I speak of it now, at the planning committee, 2 or 3 years ago, I don't know, but not, when Paul Bennett was chairman, so he did it very recently. The Rotary said they plugged like the castle. And Paul said, well, anybody got any remarks on that? What does it look like, somebody was saying. And I said, I've got a photo, I'll dig it up and show you, from 1935 when they plugged it in, you see. And I found this photo, and it was face to face with another one. And I parted them, and there was